You should be aware that the reason why this program was put into place had to do with the death of an asthmatic child, a young boy, who was taken, from eMERGE to eMERGE, or the dispatcher was trying to find an emergency room for that young fellow to go to, but they were all too busy. And the politicians heard was they was too busy because they were full. It was an influenza season, and everybody who with influenza was in the emergency departments. This young person died, and of course, when we have deaths from influenza or lots of deaths in a nursing home outbreak or this kind of thing, that's when politicians react. And I can honestly tell you that this program, when it was announced in July 2000, I was actually heard about it first on CBC on my way home for lunch. And I thought to myself, when I get back after lunch, or maybe right now, I have a few phone calls to make because this is actually quite amazing. But what was actually more annoying was the fact that it was a press conference featuring the then Minister of Health, Mrs. Whitmer, the Chief Medical Officer of Health at the time, and the President of the Ontario Hospital Association at a hospital in Toronto. And I can honestly tell you that public health was really largely not involved in this announcement whatsoever, although we were the ones who were largely carrying the ball for this program. We had little lead time. Bad enough in 2007 that we had, or was it 8, I can't remember now, that we had to scramble to get HPV vaccine going in less than a month. We had little lead time to disrupt all of our other immunization programs at the time, not now, because we do a 2-dose hepatitis B, but at the time we were doing 3 doses of hepatitis B in grade 7. We were already very busy in October and November. This was very disruptive, trying to guess how many clinics we were going to need, how many people would come out, where to hold them, all this kind of thing. So the first challenge was estimating the number of people that we were going to be immunizing. And I think really the only way that one can make a reasonable guess at that is probably by doing a public opinion poll and saying, if you were offered free influenza vaccine, would you get it? And this never happened. We were basically guessing at what we were going to be faced with when we started this program in that autumn. And if you're going to go down this road, I would definitely think that one needs to do some background work so that you have a better idea of what might be going on. So this involves planning for staffing, for locations, for the number of clinics required, and we were looking provincially of immunizing perhaps 12 million people over a 2 to 3 month period. There are two things you can do, two kinds of mistakes you can make. You can have a clinic with too many staff. That's inefficient. The price per dose goes up. But I, frankly, based on my experience, where I've seen people lined up at the door on a cold winter's night or pushing and shoving each other in a very confined space, which is chaos, I think you really do need to choose carefully and to have lots of facility available to make things run smoothly. Now, if you're going to do a universal influenza immunization program, here's the best way to do it, I think. Seriously, predicting the numbers was really difficult because the public is unpredictable. And who knows if they're going to take the vaccine, when they're going to come. And we were talking about orders of magnitude more people to immunize. Truly, we've had to depend on family physicians to support this program. We would not have been able to do without them. Even in Alberta, where public health nurses do all of the childhood vaccines, family physicians are still involved in the provision of influenza vaccines. So we need to have those folks engaged. Just to give you some idea locally, we immunize about 85,000 people in our area, which is half the population, so we're actually above the provincial average. Maybe we're getting close to that magic number where we will actually have some herd immunity. We do somewhere between 15 and 20,000 of those. The family docs do the rest. So we do need public the support of family physicians, and there is also the potential for significant impact on other public health programs, not just immunization programs, but other programs as well. And then if you look at, this is from the Ontario Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care, you can see that the physicians are doing, on a provincial basis, 75% of the universal influenza immunization program, and public health clinics and other clinics are doing the rest. So, on a very, very practical level, the first and most important thing is to find comfortable places with reasonable waiting areas. I've already talked to you about the chaos that can happen if the place is not big enough. I can already talk to you about seeing people lined up in the cold. It's embarrassing to me to leave my office when there's a trail of people out the door on a cold winter night waiting to get their influenza vaccine when we're saying this is a public good. I put down parking. I mean, it's a serious and important thing. I was washed out my window. We have a large parking lot, but there were so many people on the first night, 1 year of our first immunization clinic, that people were parking across a very busy street. And I thought to myself, if we save maybe one life through giving influenza vaccine from all these people who are coming to see us, we might be doing that at the cost of losing a couple dozen as people try to cross Portsmouth Avenue to get into our building. It's very important to consider privacy. You do this already when you're doing your routine immunization programs. You want to have a place where you can discuss medical contraindications, a place where people may have to disrobe to show you their arm to receive their injection. So that's an important consideration when you're choosing places. And talking to my staff, they say places like churches, church basements, malls, and large supermarkets have actually worked quite well. We did really very well in some of the Loblaws supermarkets, so well, in fact, that we were asked at one point in time that could we take it elsewhere because there were too many people showing up and causing traffic jams for the supermarket. The places that didn't work quite as well were schools and seniors' residences. And the schools kind of are surprising because some of us think that, you know, if we immunize children, we may have, a better chance at dampening down the activity of influenza, that we may actually be able to protect older people if the kids aren't getting sick and amplifying influenza in our communities. But there seems to be competing things going on here. For example, do we find children and parents at the schools at the same time? And most of the times we don't. So if we do want to go through down the road of all those consent forms and getting all those kids immunized, which I can honestly tell you with public health nurses doing HPV and HBV and meningococcal vaccine, it's just one more thing that they, at least in my experience, are reluctant to do. Like they really need to be convinced to do this. So you're ending up doing them in the evening, which means, because that's when parents can be available, because a lot of kids don't go, you know, their parents aren't the ones picking them up from school. It makes it kind of complicated. In seniors' residences, lots of seniors like to go to their family doctors. And so what we found in some cases was that if we went in there, we would find that, oh, yes, I'm getting my flu shot, but I'm going to my doctor because, I mean, they want the outing. And if you go into their residence, they may just not want to take advantage of that. And that puts your cost per dose up significantly. If you're going in with, a dozen nurses to give five vaccines, it doesn't make it very worthwhile. Again, picking the numbers and times and numbers of clinics, again, it's largely unpredictable. Seniors like mornings. They're probably getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and asleep by noon, right? So they want the mornings. If my late great dad were any example. Families prefer evenings and probably weekends more. So what you need to have is to have geographic and temporal spread. Different times of day over a period of several weeks, that means that you're going to have a lot of different staff available at different times, and that, of course, has implications for staffing, which I'll talk to you about in just a moment or two. Then there's the people who really want the vaccine, and they're calling you all the time, and on the first day that it's available, they show up, and this is when you have chaos. This happens in our area with snowbirds who will want to get their vaccine so they can get on the road. So you need to consider crowd control and picking a place where it's going to work well. Keeping people moving makes them happy. You need a well-oiled machine. Otherwise, the medical officer of health is going to get calls about, this wasn't a very good experience for me. And I've had those kinds of calls as well by times. You need a facility that can manage the demand that's big enough. And you hope that the vaccine is available when promised. The only thing that drives our immunizing teams most crazy is setting up the clinics way in advance and then finding out that the vaccine is not going to be available. And of course, it's probably not an issue here in Vancouver, but in other parts of this province, or certainly in Kingston, we have to hope that the weather cooperates because you can do an awful lot of effort and then have nobody show up. In terms of staffing, my recommendation is to have a program coordinator. That is a sine qua non, one person who is in control, Perhaps you need a management team if it's a big enough area, but there needs to be somebody whose only job it is to get this organized, because otherwise it's going to become very scattered. And then the question comes up, do you use your regular vaccine program staff? Well, that can be disruptive to your other programs, because we're all busy in the autumn, as you know. In Ontario, it's also compounded by the fact that we have a immunization requirement to enter school, and so we're getting immunization records for all the kids at the same time. Do you use other public health staff, which it can disrupt their programming, but if you use them out of hours, then there's collective agreements that have to be respected. It can be quite costly to be paying time and a half for evenings and weekends. Or you can use casual staff, which are often cheaper, but they may not always be very familiar with the policies and the procedures of the agency, so that is an issue as well. We've actually gone, in the end, and evolved over time from using our regular staff to using many more casual staff that we use each year, and now they have been trained. Training is important, and it's also important that every single person who is on your immunizing team be immunized, because you don't want to get the question, have you had the vaccine yourself, and the answer is no.